Everybody has a family, and every family has a story. Much like the popular TV show that I know many of you are watching, that This Is Us, that perfectly imperfect Pearson family that seems to be so relatable because they, like us, have all many of the same challenges or issues or insecurities that many of us face. And so because of that relatability, the show has become immensely popular. And it's a great show for that purpose. But again, as we mentioned in the last few weeks, as we look through the book of Genesis and just read how that plays out, the family there, no, it's not the Pearson family, it's Abraham and his family. That family there that the book of Genesis focuses on is really very much like a This Is Us, but a couple thousand years ago. It is looking at a family, a perfectly imperfect family, that puts themselves in situations that we are going to be easily for us to find that we're able to relate to, simply because of the challenges they face, maybe the questions that they ask, possibly the mistakes that they make, or the griefs that they bear, look a lot like the same questions, challenges, mistakes, and griefs that we endure as well. So everybody has a family, and every family has a story. The book of Genesis does revolve, most of the book revolves around a single family. Foundational in that look is not so much the people that we meet, but foundational in that look, and important for us to recognize this, it is how we see God at work in their midst. Because that's really what the Bible is about, isn't it? It's not so much about the people. It's not even about us. The Bible is really about God's story, how we've seen him work in the past, how we can therefore know he is going to continue working in our present. The Bible is still a living book. I know some people refer to the Bible, they like to have this little acronym, B-I-B-L-E. It is Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth. How many have heard that one? Yeah, it's not my favorite, but it's memorable, okay? You know, because it's not my favorite because I think it's far more than an instruction book. An instruction book gives us the idea that it's a bunch of rules, a bunch of do's and don'ts, do this and do this and do this. And the Bible is really way, way more than just that. Sure, there are do's and there are don'ts. That's part of the whole picture. But if we were really to try to boil it down, it is an instruction book at this most basic level. And this would be the instruction. The most basic instructions the Bible gives us are these. There is a God who cares for you. Trust him and don't expect perfection from yourself or others. You won't find that anywhere else. Only here this morning are we saying that. There is a God who cares for you. Trust him. And don't expect perfection from yourself or others. And that seems to be the message of the book of Genesis. Because we see that God is always acting in a trustworthy fashion, even though the people who we encounter in this book are thoroughly flawed. Yeah, heroes of the faith, but not perfect role models. Sometimes we get the idea that the Bible is supposed to be this pattern for us to follow. If we follow the pattern of these heroes of the faith, then we're going to be doing just fine. But it's not. It's not a pattern to follow. But it's an opportunity for us to see how God works through even their messy lives to give us hope that maybe God's about the business of working through our messy lives as well. So today, we're going to go back into the story. We're going to be looking back at Abraham and Sarah, though today in the text, because we're looking at Genesis 15 and 16, they're going to be called Abram and Sarai, because Abram and Sarai, their names will change later, and that's a significant piece of the story. But don't be confused by that. We'll touch on that next week. Okay, so don't worry about it. You hear about Abram and Sarai. Don't be confused. These are not different people. They are the Abraham and Sarah that many of us have grown up hearing about as we read through our Bible. In Genesis 15, it begins here. It says this, "After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. You know, God is beginning here as we open up this reestablishing of the covenant that God has made with Abram. Remember, Abram back in chapter 12 was the one who had that message, go to the land I will show you. I will bless you. I will give you many descendants, and through your descendants, all the world will be blessed. This becomes the heart of what we call the Abrahamic covenant, that there is a sense that God is at work, even as early as Genesis 12 in this biblical story, to do something far bigger than Abraham. It's not just for him, it's not just for his descendants, but it truly is a blessing that God is preparing to bring to the entire world. And it is something that is going on. Here, a couple chapters later, he comes back and begins to reaffirm that because Abram's having some questions. What does God say? God says, I will be a faithful protector and a faithful provider. I am your shield and your very great reward. And Abram is expected to believe that. Now we know the story. Abram does. In fact, we'll read about more in a few moments. But that is the question mark, isn't it? For all of us, this issue of trust is a hard one. God proclaims himself to be a faithful provider and a faithful protector. Even in the midst of all the circumstances that come up, even amidst all the things we talked about, even during our prayer time today, there are challenges we face which are always going to go to the very heart of that promise. Do we believe him? Do we trust him when things don't go the way we expect there to go? When his provision doesn't appear to be complete for me? When his protection for myself, for my health, or my family, or the decisions that other people make around me, when that doesn't go the way I want it to, can I trust him still? God says, I am your shield, your very great reward. Abram struggles with this. So in verse 2, it goes on. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? Remember, the heart of the promise was that you will have many descendants. And Abram now is an old man. His wife Sarai is an older lady. And he says, what can you do? I have an heir, but he's not even of my own bloodline. He is a fellow by the name of Eleazar. He lives in Damascus. He would be my heir, but he's not even mine. I mean, we're not even really connected, but he would receive what I have. Then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son who is of your own flesh and blood will be your heir. Reestablishing this promise of God's goodness, even though Abram has not yet seen that promise fulfilled. Again, here is the challenge for all of us. How do we believe how do we trust when the fulfillment is not yet? How do we wrestle with understanding who God is when the story is not completed and we can't see exactly how the story is going to end? God invites Abram to trust because he is his shield and his great reward. Will Abram trust? So God took him outside and said, look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. Again, stating something that sounds simple, but this sounds like an impossibility. But Abram believes. Verse 6 says, Abram believed the Lord, and he credited him, God, he credited it to him, Abram, as righteousness. Abram trusted, even though he could not see the outcome, because the one who held and made that promise is trustworthy. The idea that I may not know what tomorrow brings, but I know who brings tomorrow, becomes the heartbeat of Abram at this point. At this point, he says, I believe, I trust, and I can go with you this far, and God credits him as righteousness. Now, this is an interesting verse. I'm just going to go off track here just for a moment, just to do a little bit of a side note here for those who are taking the advanced placement class here today. Because this verse 6 becomes key, especially if the New Testament then comes along a couple thousand years later, because this becomes Paul's foundation, the Apostle Paul, as he is teaching the early New Testament church what it means to be followers of Christ. This idea that you are being justified by faith, by belief, is rooted in this verse 6. In fact, many of Paul's messages, both in the book of Galatians and other parts in the New Testament, comes down to this. It's not by adherence to the law. The Jews were saying, no, you need to follow the law completely, and that way you can be justified. And Paul said, no, even our father Abraham wasn't justified by his obedience to the law. He was justified how? By his faith. That we've got it mixed up. That's not our behavior. It's not our actions. It's not our somehow pleasing God with the offerings we make or the church services we go to or the good things, the good works that we might do. It is by grace we are saved through faith. Paul uses that over and over through the New Testament. This is his foundation. And this past week, does anyone know what October 31st is? All Saints Day. That's good. It's also for anyone, any of us here who are not, well, actually anybody, it's called Reformation Day. See, this is only for the advanced students, okay? This is only for the advanced students. The rest of you can tune this out. That 500 years ago, on the 31st of October, 500 years ago this year, Martin Luther made a proclamation about what it means to be saved, not by tradition, not by works, not by adherence to the law, but by faith. Sola fide in Latin was the heartbeat of the Reformation, the separation from the Catholic Church into Protestantism. This whole thing that Martin Luther brought was a reflection on Paul's talk about saved by faith, which was a reflection yet of this talk. Abram believed, and it was credited to him as righteousness. It is this thought that runs through the Bible. It is this thought that runs through history. It is this thought that runs to us today. It is how we trust God that becomes the issue. It becomes the issue. Okay, we'll get back on track here. Because it always has, and it always will be. This is the issue. So back to the story. It is hard, though, to trust God. And as that Abram already struggles. Verse 7, verse 8, as it goes on in the story, he says, but now you got to give me another sign. I need to know, how can I trust? So even Abram, when he is considered righteous by his trust, there is something that he's still wrestling with. And I think that's good for us to see. It's important for us to know that even as we have faith, we can still have doubt. It is easy, it is good for us to know that even though we still can trust God, there will be moments when our trust will waver, that we'll need to have something more, that we will complain, we will may even complain to God and ask him to show us something more, because Abram does, and that's okay. Again, the idea that he is saved by faith, that he has got complete trust and is done, is a misnomer. That's not how it works for us human beings. And we see that here in Genesis. In Proverbs 3, this is a great verse, one of my favorite verses out of the entire Bible. It says this, Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Have you heard this verse? Yes. What a powerful verse, and especially for difficult times, to trust in the Lord with all our heart, to lean not on our own understanding. You see, that is always our go-to, isn't it? To lean on our understanding. It's my intellect. It's the way I see the world. It's the way I think God's supposed to act, or the way I think life is supposed to be. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will direct your paths. It is a powerful promise in the midst of this crazy world that with all the ups and downs, all the twists and turns, that he will direct our path if we trust with all our heart and do our very best to not let ourselves get in the way. Because that's where we get into trouble, isn't it? It is always this struggle we have with faith or trust and our need to control. This becomes the issue. This becomes the crux for all of us. We want to control things, to keep things in our safety zone, in our security realm, and we often do that thinking that we can manipulate it to make it happen. But when things go wrong, or when people around us do other things, maybe things that we don't have any control over, but we want to have control over it, we get overwhelmed. We get overwrought. Things aren't going the way it should be going. I want my happiness, and I want it now. Yeah, yesterday is when I want it. Absolutely. But I'll take it now. Because I want it, and I want it now. And it is a, hear me on this, when we say it, and you hear me saying that, it sounds very immature, doesn't it? It sounds very juvenile, doesn't it? But it's how we work. It's so much easier for us to demand our way and to want it now than to say, I will trust God because I know He is good. It doesn't look good right now. Things are not looking the way I want them to, but I trust that He is good. See, there's a difference that happens when we move from the anxiety-ridden sense of I want what I can't have and I want it now, but I can't have it. We get filled with anxiety. We get filled with dread. We get filled with grief. We get filled with despair because the world doesn't operate that way. But if we can somehow move out of that need for control to say, I don't control what happens with them. I don't control what happens out in the world. I don't control what so-and-so may have said or what so-and-so may have done. If I can somehow let that go and say, I'm going to trust God through this instead, we begin to move back to the path of peace. It is hard for us. It is hard for us, this trust challenge. But we are invited to see through the circumstances to the reality that God is in this and God is still at work in it. I'm going to keep going here. Join to the next chapter in Genesis. We see that this struggle continues for Abram and Sarai, that there is something that continues to go on, and it's kind of a fun part of the story. It's kind of a crazy part of the story, actually. But now Sarai, remember, she is his wife. Abram's wife had borne him no children. So what happens to this promise? But she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. And so she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children, so go and sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Now, this sounds odd to us, 21st century North Americans, okay? First off, we don't have Egyptian slaves. Second off, we don't usually offer them to our husband. Hey, here's a good idea. Sleep with somebody else. That sounds like it runs against our moral code. It runs against what we think is right. And, you know, and it is. But in that day, that made sense to her. Why? Because she believes the promise that God has made, that Abram is going to have descendants that will be a blessing to the earth. But rather than trusting, what is she trying to do? Control. I'll come up with an alternative plan that is actually probably better than God's because God isn't doing his. How many of you felt that way? I'm going to come up with an alternative because God's not doing his part. And how often does that work out? It doesn't. It doesn't. And so we see again, not a pattern of perfection here in Sarai. She is a struggler trying to figure out how it is that I can trust God when things don't seem to be going right, when that diagnosis comes back and it's dire. When that lump I discover and I don't know what it is. When that circumstance takes place and the marriage falls apart, my world is upside down. Where is God in this? This is what Sarai struggles with. Verse 4, so Abram slept with Hagar and she conceived. And when she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. And then Sarai said to Abram, you are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I love it. You know, doesn't this have the same echo from back even in the Garden of Eden? It's your fault that you are good at the plan I hatched. Darn it. But now my slave, I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows that she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. This becomes, again, a dividing line in this family of the heritage. This is a dividing line because there's struggle. The struggle is, I can't follow God's plan. It doesn't seem to be working, so I'll make up my own, and it leads me to more trouble. This is the challenge for all of us. Will we trust what God is doing? And sometimes it is about the timing. I'm sure that for Sarai, it was about the timing. She, Abram, was not a young man, and she was, her clock was way past ticking. There is something going on here. Things were getting worse. The odds of God coming through seemed to be getting less. The clock was ticking. It was getting dark. They decided to come up with a new plan. It doesn't work. And so here we are. A lot of times when it comes to trust, the challenge for us to trust is in patience, of being able to wait, of being able to say, in the midst of this, what I don't yet know, I can somehow trust and not be overwhelmed by my fears. Jesus said, do not let your hearts be troubled, but trust in God, trust also in me. There is something about that that Jesus was trying to reaffirm for his disciples, that we are trying to continue to learn, that no matter what that circumstance is, when that child goes wayward, when everything turns upside down, when the news is not good, what do? We are invited to trust. Remember, the key basic instruction is that there is a God who cares for you. Trust him, but don't expect perfection from yourself or others. Becomes that foundation for us. So today as we wrap up, I want to do this and simply say we're going to celebrate again a memorial act of Christ's sacrifice for us. We call it Holy Communion. But as we come, remember that that's exactly what Jesus did. He said, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden. Maybe today you're weary and heavy laden because of the stress that control causes on us. The things that are out of place that just continue to eat at us, that keep us from sleeping at night, keep our minds occupied and wear us out. Those other people in our life who don't do or don't say the way we want them to, and because their decisions break our heart, we want to somehow control it, and it keeps us up at night. There is something that goes on. He says, come to me, all you who are weary. Whatever it is that is causing that stress, that is causing that overwhelm, bring it here today. And as we take the bread, and we dip it into the cup, and as we receive the cup, the body of Christ and his blood poured out for you and for me, it is for the purpose of meeting us where we are, that we might come to know him and learn to trust him all the more. So bring those issues that cause us strain. And as we receive, leave it here on the altar at the front of the church. Father, it is to you that we look, and on this day we come recognizing how difficult trust is, how difficult it is for us, and the wear and tear on our physical as well as our emotional being can be because of the uncertainty that we have. Father, protect us from ourselves and meet us here to assure us of your goodness in the midst of it all. We thank you that on the night in which Christ was betrayed, he took the bread and having broke it, he offered it, saying, take and eat, for this is my body broken for you. In the same way, he took the cup and having blessed it, he offered it to his disciples and said, take and drink from this, all of you, for this is my blood, blood of the new covenant, poured out for you and poured out for the forgiveness of sins. Father, it is in remembrance of your love for us, your care for us, your standing in our place that we come today, seeking to not only receive, but to trust you more. So receive our burdens. Receive our worries. Meet us in our places of fear and anxiety. And allow your body and your blood to be applied and to lift us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.